Hello, and welcome to Friends for Life, a podcast of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's National Mission. We're here to come alongside you as we journey through life under the cross. What does it look like to care for our neighbors in body and soul? How do we tend to our own body and soul? How can we speak up for life? And finally, how do we share the faith with the next generation? Join us as we have these conversations and learn together. We hope you'll stick around and be our friends for life.
Thanks so much for joining us. I'm your host, Steph Neugebauer, here with Pastor Dan and Karen Kempen. Welcome. Would you please introduce yourselves to our listeners?
Sure. Thanks. It's great to be with you. My name is Karen. I am a graduate of Concordia in Seward, Nebraska. I have served the church as a DCE, as a classroom teacher, and presently I serve as the director of worship music at St. John's here in Midland, Michigan.
And I'm a pastor, and Karen and I have had joy in ministry for 30 years.
Do you serve the same church?
We do at, currently, yes. We are in Midland, Michigan, which is, as the name might indicate, somewhat centrally located in Michigan, but much better known for being the home of Dow, the Dow Chemical Corporation. So that kind of influences our culture here.
Yeah, which my grandfather retired from and worked there for decades.
Neat.
Yes, I have family from that area. Well, it's good to have you both on. I know that this season is especially delicate, although honestly, we have every season feels pretty heavy with the issues that we bring up and talk about. But I'm just hoping that you would begin by sharing your story. As listeners know, this is a season about diagnoses, whether prenatally or postnatally, and the effect, of course, that it has on the child who's diagnosed, but also the family. So if you would please share your story, and then we can and talk about that and how the church can care for families.
So Karen and I had opportunity to walk through something that was very surprising to us at the time and turned out to be a great blessing. But our firstborn child was born healthy, but we had our second daughter. There were some anomalies that with prenatally that were noticed. We elected not to do prenatal diagnosis because, you know, we were committed one way or the other. But it turned out that our daughter, Catherine, was born with a disorder called trisomy 18. And we had her for 10 and a half months before she went home to Jesus. And that's the story. We're going to take some time to talk about with everyone today. Particularly wanted to share the things that God taught us. Karen, do you have anything to add to that?
No, that is basically the story. You know, it was about the end of the seventh month when the doctor, I was measuring big, and he wanted to get it a level 2 ultrasound. And just throw in there that we had a wonderful Christian OB doctor who was with us every step and knew that we were planning to carry the baby to term and deliver the baby and offered us a lot of support. That was a blessing.
Yeah. We've been married a long time, by the way. I've learned to check in with Karen to see if there's anything I've missed.
That's fair. Wise. So I don't know if I had shared with you, I am a sonographer. So when you're sharing that they noticed some anomalies with ultrasound, at that point, did the doctor cue you in on the fact that she might have some health challenges, but she didn't have a diagnosis until she was born? Is that correct?
That's correct. What they noticed when I had the level 2 ultrasound, they said it looks like the baby has a blocked kidney, and they noticed that I had a single umbilical artery. And they said that may or may not be something, but we often see that in parents of babies with Down syndrome. So we were alerted that there may or may not, you know, be an issue with the child.
And I would say that if prenatal diagnosis does give you a chance to kind of know what's coming. For us, it was a little more whiplash because honestly, what I remember is them saying, it's probably nothing. But it could. There's a small percentage that it could be something like Down syndrome, but it's probably not.
So did you carry her, Karen, to full term, or was she born prematurely?
No, I carried her full term.
And then when did she receive her trisomy 18 diagnosis?
She was transported. You know, once she was born, we noticed a few things that were off. She didn't have a fully formed left ear. She was clenching her fists in a way the doctor said was unusual. And so a great blessing was that Dan baptized her right there in the hospital. And she was transported, at that time we lived in Monroe, Michigan, and she was transported to a NICU in Toledo, Ohio. And a few days later is when we got her official trisomy 18 diagnosis.
I was introduced to it rather abruptly in the delivery room. It was a surgical delivery. And for those who have experienced that, they invited me to set up by Karen, and there's a sanitary screen that's put up that kind of blocks your view from everything that's happening. And when the baby comes, they take it over to a station and they do all the, you know, newborn things and check the rating. That's called an Apgar. And I remember all of that. And for whatever reason, Karen and I were talking, and I don't know, may have been praying. But when they brought Catherine over to the table, I could hear in the background the nurses going, "Come on, baby, breathe. Breathe, baby. Come on." So I just, that was the moment for me that I knew something was like seriously wrong.
What did they share with you about what trisomy 18 typically means for these children?
So when she was born, she was very frail. There were a number of things that were, like Karen said, that they noticed, but they had to do testing in order to confirm the trisomy. So she was transported to the NICU, as Karen said, and we had to wait. Was it a full, I don't remember how long it was, but it was, we didn't get the diagnosis like right away. Our family had time to gather. Both our parents, both sides of our family were there when we heard the news. But that I do, yeah, I guess that is sort of sticks in my mind. I remember the doctors using the term lethal. And Karen, what was the phrase that you remember the doctor saying when we were presented with the diagnosis?
Incompatible with life. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How did that sit with you when you saw her there alive?
Well, of course. We learned, that began a very intense time of learning a tremendous amount about medical things, about care, and about the disorder particularly. Karen's memory with statistics is probably better than mine, but as I recall it, something like 95% of babies with this condition don't make it to a year of life. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we understood what the doctors were saying.
And it was strange because you have that odd mixture of joy at having this new life and this daughter that you love and the sadness of, you know, the anticipatory grief of knowing what's coming.
Specifically, what kind of health challenges are associated with trisomy 18, and why do they say that it's incompatible with life, or that, you know, only 95% make it to a year? What are the challenges that prevent them from living a quote unquote full life?
Well, trisomy is a genetic disorder. It has to do with the chromosome pairs. And because of that, without understanding more, and I'm not a doctor, but you can understand the way genetics works is that it affects every cell of your body. So the problems, as with Down syndrome, even more so with the trisomy 18, is it affects everything. Catherine had heart problems, brain issues, you know, it was just comprehensive. Everything is affected.
I always say, ironically, her kidneys were fine. The one thing they had said is she might have a blocked kidney. That was fine.
Yeah. So did she have trouble breathing, eating? What were her daily challenges? And was she at home with you eventually, or did she stay in the NICU for her lifespan?
She was in the NICU for, I think it was about 10 days. And then we were able to bring her home, which was terrifying. We brought her home with a heart monitor, lots of medicines, and she struggled to breathe. She struggled to eat. At one point, we did have a gastric feeding tube installed so that she was able to get her proper nutrition. But her days were a struggle.
You know, one of the comments I would make for anyone who might be listening to this who's either facing a diagnosis that is intimidating or just preparing yourself maybe with some fear or concern that it could be in places is number one. One of the things we learned is that God will never lead you to something that's outside of his plan. And when I mean that, his plan is good. It was very scary to hear about this, but walking through it and knowing that God was with us, when we look back, it was a great blessing. The other thing is it can be very intimidating dealing with people in the medical community, incredibly impressive people, incredibly smart and gifted people. But however high level those medical people are, They're human beings. That's one of the things we learned. And that as you go through this as a Christian, as you have a child that may have issues, you're witnessing to them whether you realize it or not. You're witnessing your faith and your understanding of God. And that can go in multiple directions. For instance, there were a number of people, like when we first got the diagnosis, the NICU, or he may have been a hospital or anyway, the doctor who explained to us about the diagnosis encouraged us basically to not care for her, to let her die because she couldn't develop fully. We didn't want to do that. We wanted to care for her. And so before they released us, the head of I think it was the head of the children's hospital, or it may have been the head of the NICU, a phenomenally gifted woman came in and tried to talk us out of, I remember the phrase, of having a medicated home. So, you know, when we said no, Catherine's ours, we're going to care for her for as long as we have, we were witnessing to life to them. But also witnessing to love, she had a really good heart. She had a lot of heart problems. And one of the things that was brought home to us pretty much after the fact, I don't know if we really saw this, what you would say in the middle of it, Karen, but when it was all said and done, the heart doctor, who was very businesslike, cerebral, after she passed away, he came and said to us that the way we cared for her was a tremendous testimony of love, and that he was really moved by that. And it really surprised me. Witnessing is one of those things that happens when we walk with Christ. And sometimes there's intentionality to it, but we're a witness at all times.
To this day, I remember the one doctor in the NICU who was very businesslike and told us that after her diagnosis, that she will never have any quality of life. She's never going to know you. She'll never smile for you. And to this day, my favorite picture of Catherine is her with a gigantic smile. You know, it's still my Facebook profile picture. It's the most beautiful thing because she was known. Mm-hmm. She was fully loved by God and by us.
How is the way that you cared for her rather than letting her succumb without care to her health challenges? How was that a testimony to what you as a Christian believed about life versus maybe what they were, some were trying to push you to do and what they believed about her life?
Yeah, I don't know. The how is a difficult question to ask. But just in the midst of it, I guess the fact that you have a clarity about that, about the most basic things, because there were so many things we didn't know and so many things we didn't have an answer to. You know, one of the suggestions was hospice, that hospice would be brought in. And when I make this comment, please understand that there's a wide variety of the experience a person can have with hospice. And I've seen some really great, great hospice care. But I do think it's something you have to be a little bit careful with. So when the hospice came in, the first thing they wanted us to do was sign a DNR, which is a do not resuscitate. And we just said, we're not doing that. And it was sort of like, well, okay, I guess we're done. I mean, we were, you know, sort of willing to go down that path. But, you know, we were Catherine's caretakers and protectors. You know, a good way, Karen reminded me of this when we were talking in advance. One of the things we said to each other a lot, it was kind of our clarifying thought, is we don't want to look back and have regrets. You know, let's try to do what we won't regret. So that put a big burden on us personally. I mean, it was really intense. I mean, we learned after she was home for a week that we basically had to trade off. One of us would try to sleep and the other one would end up pretty much being up all night. We did that for months. No regrets. But I mean, this is another thing you could learn that we learned from our experiences is when things are intimidating, when you think there's no way you could possibly do it, I can't really explain this other than say, God makes heavy burdens light. God gives you the strength you need when you're in the middle of it. And I look back personally in my life, and those months were when I was at my best. That was my best because everything was clear. I mean, I knew what I, you know, love was clear to me then, much more than it is in most of the rest times of my life.
And the beautiful thing is God met us right there in our grief. You know, I was reminded at that time that for me personally, my faith doesn't rest on how well I perform or how faithfully I pray. It rests solely on Jesus. You know, Jesus who entered suffering himself, Jesus who wept at graves, and Jesus who conquered death, not by avoiding it, but by going through it. And that gave us a lot of strength.
Yeah, and surrounded us with wonderful Christian support. I mean, the congregation in Monroe, Michigan, where we were at the time, was just phenomenal. Just a wonderful life experience to be among the people of God.
Would you be willing to talk about that? You know, Karen, you just mentioned the word grief, which is an interesting word when you put it alongside someone who's living still. Catherine was alive at that moment, but you still felt grief. So how did your church come alongside of you and care for you and support you, your church and or friends, family? What kind of support did you receive even in that time of grief, even while she was still alive?
Well, we got a lot of food, which is right. How a lot of Lutherans culturally show love is through food. We got a lot of food.
I remember at first somebody brought an entire Thanksgiving dinner, and it was the two of us and our daughter Sarah, who I think was maybe four at the time. So we had to learn to back off to maybe every 3 or 4 days. But just the desire to provide anything we needed. To provide Dan with extra time off so that he could be home and with the family was a great blessing. Boy, when we would take Catherine to church, she was just the star of the show. You know, everybody gathered around and just loved her and wanted to hold her and just be a part of what was happening with us. They were truly family to us.
Yeah, it wasn't as though like they raised funds or did this thing we needed. They loved us and we could tell that, and that, you know, they showed it, and that love was a tremendous support.
And it was really a neat thing because as Catherine's life progressed, and I don't know how it works through LWML, somebody says something and somebody says something, but we received so many cards from different groups all over the country. We heard a story that something about Catherine's story made it into an Easter sermon in New Mexico. It was just amazing how one little life could touch so many.
Yeah, we used to say during her life that, you know, she's accomplishing more in her short life than we are in all of our ministry.
Which brings us to the point of life isn't boiled down to what you can produce or what you can provide. An ethic of life or looking at life through a Christian worldview, our entire life is a passive process where we receive gift upon gift. And what makes a life worth living is not what Catherine could have done during her 10 and a half months or produced or provided, but it was that she received Christ's gifts and was cared for. And so could you speak to the value of her life a little bit more, even as she lived for her 10 and a half months and then beyond, even as you remember her today?
Yeah, I'm reminded just that God is the author of life. And she was knit together in my womb by the Lord, just as we all are. She's a reminder to me that our worth isn't measured by longevity, as you say, or productivity or visible success. Her life mattered because she was created by God, period.
Yeah, I don't think it's by accident that Jesus used that parent-child love to describe the love of the Father. I mean, you know, you don't love your baby because of what they can do for you. You know, if you think about it, that doesn't even make sense. Now, as they grow up, you do have expectations. But we have three other children we're blessed with, and they're now over 18, and we have expectations of that. But Catherine, you know, reached her potential. We were proud of her just as much as we're proud of our accomplished other children.
Well, finally, as we wrap up, what would you hope to share with all those listening, maybe who are facing a very similar situation or diagnosis? What kind of encouragement or word of hope would you want to share with them?
I would say trust God. We're very thankful after the fact to have gone through it. We learned so much. And one of them, as I mentioned earlier, God's plan. Sometimes we cause ourselves grief by sort of fighting with God. I would give credit if I remember who it was, but somebody who had been also through this sort of a surprise diagnosis used a metaphor that was really helpful to me. It said, it's sort of like you've been planning a vacation to Disney World in Florida, and, you know, you made your plans and you packed your bags and you get on the plane and then you get off the plane and you realize you're in Alaska. It's like, well, your first reaction is like, this is not what I wanted. It's not what I packed for. But, you know, if you take a moment and adjust your mind, there's awesome stuff in Alaska. That's a really great place to be. You know, God takes you to a different destination. You know, first trust God and allow him to bring you around to see that what he has in this is going to be really awesome.
Yeah, I would say it was terrifying going in, but we were most definitely blessed. And just that God will make heavy burdens light. He will give you the strength to bear it.
And then finally, what would you like the church as a whole to know? You can say, make food, provide care for other children, whatever it would be. But what is your kind of your charge for the church to come alongside families who are suffering as you had with grief and with the weight of care for Catherine in that time?
Probably just, I mean, to be there. I mean, probably the biggest hardship would be for a person to face this and feel alone or not feel seen. Sometimes we have this sense that it's like we have to have all the answers. You know, we Lutherans sometimes like explain to daylight, and if we don't feel like we have an explanation to offer, we're intimidated. We feel like we don't have anything to offer. But just being there, just simple love, just saying, I'm sorry. Is there anything I could do? Usually we Lutherans cover that awkwardness by bringing food, and that's okay too. People understand what that means when that happens, but just don't leave people alone.
Yeah, after Catherine died, I remember my best friend in the congregation. She was the first to show up at our house, and she did bring a deli tray, which proved to be useful because we had lots of visitors coming after that. But I remember we just sat there. You know, we didn't have to say anything, but just the fact that she was there was a great blessing to me.
Mm-hmm. I remember, I think, everyone who came to Catherine's funeral, even if we had a chance to talk or not, it was just the fact that they were there.
Thank you so much for taking the time today to share about Catherine's life and the care that you provided for her and the care of the church around. I pray that the story and the stuff that you shared today will be a blessing to many who listen, and I know it will. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.
And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. If you liked what you heard, please leave us a review. And don't forget to click the follow or subscribe button so you don't miss out on upcoming episodes. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at LCMS Life. And finally, listeners, we want to hear from you. Do you have an idea about a guest you'd like to hear from or a topic you want talked about? Email us at friendsforlife@lcms.org. We want to hear from you about what you want to hear about when it comes to issues of life.
For joining us, Friends for Life is a podcast that discusses the life God has given and the people he has called you to serve, right where you are in God's mission.